Keep your umbrella close. I'll walk you through our evening hour by hour. And how long we stay dry before clouds and showers make a comeback.
Plus, the race for a U.S. House seat comes down to a runoff. What the candidates must do to be the last one standing. And why North Carolina could pose a challenge for both Biden and Trump.
Well, some showers are still lingering in parts of our area tonight. Just a quick look from the WREL Live camera network, clearly showing you there's still some droplets here and there across our area. Thankfully, most of the storm is now out of its way, as you can see the radar behind me here. Thanks for joining us. I'm Chris Lovingen.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. Yeah, this is a live look at the radar. You can see the rain still hovering over the northeast part of our viewing area up toward the Virginia line. Meteorologist Mike Mays is in the WREL Severe Weather Center. Mike, when is this thing going to be done with us?
I think completely done probably 4, 5, 6 a.m. tomorrow. We've got a bit of energy in the upper atmosphere that's off to the west that's helping to develop this rain here in South Carolina. That will be moving into our southern county shortly. Up toward the southern Virginia line and over into the Chapel Hill area, we're still seeing a little bit of light rain. Chatham County, some light rain over toward Orange and Alamance counties and points northward. And Roanoke Rapids, you're finally seeing the end of the heavy rain that was along the I-95 corridor this afternoon that produced rainfall totals exceeding an inch and a half in some locations. Now, the next bit of precipitation is from this upper level energy that's spinning in. Now, these thunderstorms I've been watching have been weakening as they've been approaching, but they will make their way, or at least what's left of them will be making their way into our south or southern counties over the next few hours. 7 o'clock on Futurecast, you can see the rain in the northeast. This is the batch that I'm watching that'll be making its way into our southern counties over the next few hours. I think the model's a little underdone. I think it'll be a little bit more widespread than what it's showing here. And I'm keeping it a 50% chance for some rain overnight. There'll be low clouds, fog. We're already seeing some fog form across the area. We'll have more clouds in the coming days and more rain coming for Saturday. And I'll track that with Futurecast coming up in less than 15 minutes.
Oh, boy. Okay, Mike. Thank you.
One of the most watched primaries in our area is still undecided tonight. The U.S. House District 13. This is the one that wraps around the triangle, including Franklin, Johnston, Harnett, Lee, and parts of Wake County. One of the 14 GOP candidates on the ballot, no one got enough votes to get the nomination. And now Kelly Daughtry and Brad Knott will head to a runoff in May. WREL's Matt Tallhelm found out what the candidates are doing to get the win.
Brad Knott has 9 days to officially notify the Board of Elections here that he will seek a runoff, but he's already telling supporters this fight isn't over yet.
Knott made that message clear in a social media post. We're hitting the campaign trail again to secure victory in the Republican primary runoff so I can fight for you in Congress to secure the border, stop the surge in crime and disorder, and reduce inflation by cutting wasteful spending. The former federal prosecutor is challenging Johnston County Attorney Kelly Daughtry to a head-to-head race after she failed to get 30% of the vote in Tuesday's primary. In a statement, Daughtry's campaign says the results make it clear that voters are seeking a candidate who will prioritize America first. I want to compliment my fellow Republican candidates in the races they ran. I look forward to the next 60 days as we continue to rally support in North Carolina's 13th congressional district.
Now it's all hands on deck, doors being knocked throughout the district, new ads coming out.
Luke Stancil leads a super PAC that's raising funds to support Daughtry's campaign. He's looking at her lead in her home county, where she got nearly 6,000 more votes than Knott, who fell to third place there.
But you're going to see a great level of support for Kelly to rally behind her from the citizens of Johnston County to send a citizen of their county to Congress.
She's not necessarily the overwhelming favorite. I think it could be pretty interesting.
NC State political science professor Andrew Taylor says it will come down to which candidate can get more people to the polls for the second time in 2 months.
The people who care intensely about you being the nominee is going to be really the key here, rather than trying to persuade people to get off their couches who really don't care to.
Both Daughtry and Knott are tying themselves to former President Donald Trump's campaign, but experts say both are likely to face criticism for their connections to Democrats in the past. Daughtry donated to Democratic campaigns and Knott worked under a Democratic administration. Matt Tallhelm, WREL News, Raleigh.
Just more context here. Whoever wins the May 14th runoff is heavily favored to win the general election in November against Democrat Frank Pierce. And after last night's election, the woman in charge of North Carolina's public schools will not keep her job. State Superintendent Kathy Truitt lost last night's primary race. Michelle Morrow took the GOP nomination instead. Morrow is a homeschool mother who has called schools socialism and indoctrination centers. She last ran for office in 2022 when she lost the race of a Wake County school board seat.
While most of last night's races weren't much of a surprise, the general elections will be very tough to predict. That's especially true for the presidential race. A Trump-Biden rematch is all but locked in. But both face some challenges in North Carolina. For starters, Nikki Haley made it to within 20 points of Trump in Wake, Durham, Orange, and Mecklenburg counties. I asked Meredith College political science professor David McLennan what that might signal.
We've always known that Donald Trump did well among rural, less educated voters, and those counties you identified are the most urban and the most educated counties. So, you know, this is where Donald Trump is going to continually have problems trying to reach out to those voters. I mean, he had trouble with them in 16, 20, and presumably in 24.
As for Biden, McLennan says he faces an uphill battle with minority groups and young people. This was especially true in Robeson County. Biden got just 63% of the vote there last night. That is much lower than similarly sized counties like Wayne and Nash, where Biden got 88% of the vote.
The place that Joe Biden did the worst yesterday was in Robeson County, which is a high minority county. And so that just symbolizes the challenges he's got in the next 8 months. If he doesn't get the young voters, the minority voters out, at least to the level that he saw in 2020, if not even higher, that makes winning the state of North Carolina very difficult.
In the end, what this could very well come down to is getting voters to show up.
So it's going to be really two different electorates in North Carolina, the Trump base and the Biden base. And it really is going to be who can motivate those voters to come out at levels even higher than they saw in 2020.
Less than a quarter of eligible North Carolina voters cast their ballot in the primary. That's our state's lowest turnout for a presidential primary since 2004.
An esteemed civil rights attorney took the stand today in a major court case in Johnston County. This trial could have serious implications for more than 100 inmates on death row. Hassan Bakot is arguing he was convicted of the death penalty on the basis of racial bias. The Racial Justice Act is what is in question here. It allows death row prisoners like Bakot to challenge their sentence if they can prove race played a role in their prosecution. Attorney Brian Stevenson testified that much of the jury selection process supports Bakot's claim.
If you said, I don't want anybody who expresses any hesitation on the death penalty, and you struck everybody, it becomes credible. But when you accept white jurors and you discard black jurors, it doesn't become a race-neutral reason. Based on this reason alone.
Now, Bakot was convicted in the 2007 death of Anthony Searles during an attempted robbery. Searles' mother says that she wants Bakot to stay on death row. And we'll hear more from her coming up a little bit later on WREL. Now, Cary-based software company SAS is letting go of more employees, it turns out. The company would not say how many, but did share the positions will come from its retail solutions division. WREL's Joanne Grace talked to a local economist to understand the implications this has for the Triangle.
SAS is one of the biggest tech companies right here in the Triangle. So when the company announced positions would be cut, many began to worry. Economist Mike Walden says why we shouldn't.
We should not be worried that SAS is going to be here.
Just a couple of minutes into our interview, Dr. Walden explained what's behind SAS's cuts. Last year, the company acknowledged it was cutting about 1% of its total workforce, or about 140 of its 14,000 employees worldwide.
I think improve its financial bottom line by increasing some efficiencies in the workforce they have, which usually translates to some people being laid off.
Today's developments are focused on the Retail Solutions Division. In a statement, the spokesperson for SAS said, quote, "Evolving our organizational structure and aligning the right talent to our core focus areas is part of our normal business process and remains a priority for SAS." Despite today's announcement, it appears the company is still hiring in Cary. Currently, on the company's website, there are 24 job openings, three of which are for internships.
The Triangle is still extremely viable for attracting tech companies. The tech sector is going, in my mind, going to continue to grow and expand in the Triangle. Getting a tech job in the Triangle, I think, is certainly going to be an alternative for a lot of well-educated people going down the road.
In Raleigh, Julian Grace, WREL News.
When online sports gambling becomes legal next week, bettors will watch the games, sports books will watch the money, and state officials will watch your behavior. Up next, the plan to keep tabs on problem gambling in North Carolina and why it's a lot more common than you might think.
Plus, if you think your vote doesn't matter, plot twist, it does. Just ahead, the primary races in North Carolina that were decided by fewer than 5 votes.
We are less than a week away from North Carolina joining 26 states that already have online sports betting. Since you're watching TV right now, I know you have been inundated with the ads reminding you about this. Monday, March 11th at noon is when you will be able to begin placing bets on your favorite teams. And as we've learned from commercials past, the sports books have a creative way of pulling you in.
And right now, new customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets.
This is a FanDuel commercial that ran during the Super Bowl, offering bonus bets if you put in $5. It's a common promotion with a simple intent of getting you to sign up and place that first bet. That's one way they draw you in. But the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services knows that for too many people, that can be the start of a slippery slope. Do you know anyone who's a natural redhead? Do you know anyone with green eyes? If you answered yes to either of those, you know someone who is part of only 2% of the world's population. So it's not unfathomable that you might also know someone who is or becomes a problem gambler. An estimated 2 to 3% of Americans are considered to have mild or moderate gambling problems. Gambling addiction is enough of a concern that there is an entire division of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services dedicated to problem gambling.
We've seen a lot of growth over the past few years with our abilities to reach youth, with our abilities to reach college students, with our abilities to provide treatment, with our ability to provide peer support services.
This problem gambling program is now set to get $2 million a year from sports betting taxes to the state. This is what you see up top here. Now note that this $2 million stays at $2 million despite the projected exponential growth in revenue that the state is set to receive. On the other hand, UNC athletics departments, major events and attractions in the state, and the government are going to get a percentage of the sports betting tax revenue. See how their projected distributions go up and up and up. More and more people are at risk of getting addicted to gambling, but the funding stays the same. The National Council on Problem Gambling estimates the risk of gambling addiction grew by 30% between the years 2018 and 2021. So with the heightened exposure to gambling creating a greater risk for problem gambling, the state is making efforts with the finite resources it has to educate people, people as young as middle schoolers.
Middle schools and high schools are our current reach. We actively have about 40 schools and at-risk community organizations every year. Sometimes that goes down a little bit and sometimes that goes up a little bit, but that has everything to do with the amount of money that I have in my budget.
The state offers grants for schools and organizations to apply to so they can have this gambling curriculum funded. Soon they'll be offering grants to entire school systems, starting with Charlotte-Mecklenburg this year. Woodrain tells me they are also targeting college kids, particularly college athletes, because they are particularly at risk to sports betting. And even though most people won't become problem gamblers, those who do can and do hit rock bottom. A 2022 article says disordered gambling has the highest suicide rate among all addictions, with 1 in 5 problem gamblers attempting suicide. So with this $7.5 billion sports betting industry launching here, the state will be monitoring your sports betting behavior with the help of a pioneer in gambling research out of East Carolina University. Her name is Dr. Michelle Malkin, and earlier this month, I had the chance to speak with her. Dr. Malkin, thank you for being here with me. The new program that you are leading is very research heavy. What kind of research will you be doing?
We will be doing regular prevalence studies of gambling behavior and risk among the general population as well as marginalized groups here in North Carolina to better understand what the behavior and risk is happening here as we continue to legalize new forms of gambling.
We know that sports betting is legal in 38 states. What is your biggest data-driven observation about what's happening in other parts of the country?
So what we see in other parts of the country is that as new forms of gambling is legalized, there is a rapid growth in the number of people who are engaging in gambling. So we see an increase in prevalence. What we also see is a huge increase in the number of calls to the gambling helplines in those jurisdictions. And we can anticipate that happening here as well. Since sports wagering is still fairly new, it's only been legal for a couple of years, we're starting to see in the prevalence studies that there may be an increase in gambling related harms, as well as individuals who are identified as having gambling disorder. And we do not know yet how much that will level off or decrease as that new form of gambling kind of becomes mainstream in society. But we will anticipate here in North Carolina a large increase in people seeking help for gambling.
Wow. All right. ECU professor Dr. Michelle Malkin, director of the Gambling Research and Policy Initiative. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot to consider here. WREL also recently talked to a psychology expert about the group most prone to gambling addiction and why. Find that story along with resources to help on WREL.com. Just search gambling.
All right, I'm here in the WREL Severe Weather Center with meteorologist Mike Mays. Mike, I keep looking at this map you have here. And what we had before, it's already pushed out, but still kind of there in the northeastern part of our state.
Yeah, and boy, did the rain come down heavy along the I-95 corridor, over an inch and a half of rain in some spots. Yeah, they got big downpours, water accumulating in ditches. Now, Chris, what we're seeing, some light rain across Chatham County, Orange County, Alamance County, Durham County. This will rotate in. And that's the area of showers and thunderstorms that I was watching for the past couple of hours. This is with our upper-level energy that's shifting to the north and east, now advancing into our southern counties. It's quite possible if you're watching from Lumberton and Bladen County and Columbus and Brunswick counties that you could see some thunderstorms. This will move to the northeast, maybe impact Fayetteville, something we'll watch over the next couple hours. But take a look at the rainfall totals. Officially 1.51 at Pine Level, Rocky Mount Wilson Airport 1.50, Kenley 1.28, Halifax 1.04, pretty hefty rain, Warrenton 5,600, Goldsboro about a half inch. So some folks really got pummeled today. Others didn't see a whole lot. Out at RDU was about 0.3 inch, 0.6 in Fayetteville. Sanford, the road's still a little damp. Fayetteville looking good. Chapel Hill, there's your little bit of light rain that was showing up on the radar. Rocky Mount Mills, you're one of the locations that saw that heavy rain earlier today. And there could be some fog forming in spots if we see a little bit of clearing overnight. Be aware of that. And it could be dense. 58 at Southern Pines, 54 at Roxborough, 58 at Rocky Mount. More rain is possible. We'll keep a 30% chance of rain in, perhaps a 40% chance overnight as the main upper level low comes on by. And even for the morning commute, I think we'll see overcast, maybe some fog, and maybe a sprinkle or two. There's the upper level energy here that'll swing on through. Then Thursday and Friday, a couple of dry days, and then our next system will start to form across the plains on Friday and make its way in on Saturday. So we'll start future cast tomorrow morning, 5 a.m., looking at a lot of clouds, maybe some fog to start the day, partly to mostly cloudy for your Thursday. It'll be in the 60s like it was today, officially 60 at RDU. For Friday, we look at mostly cloudy skies. Here comes the rain for the weekend. Now, this is a low resolution model. Looks like quite a bit of rain. I'll have high resolution model data tomorrow, so join me through tomorrow afternoon, 7 o'clock, 10 on Fox 50, 11 on WRL. I'll have model data showing a better idea of what to expect on Saturday, the timing of the rain, the amount of the rain, if it's going to last all day. The good thing about what's coming up is it's not impacting the entire weekend. It'll be gone on Sunday. We have a northwest flow that resumes on Sunday, bringing back the cooler air, the less humid air. Sunday is sunny, it is windy, and it is a whole lot less humid, and the beginning of a dry pattern that'll probably last all next week. So still some light rain overnight, drizzle as well. Watch out for some fog, some heavier showers in our southern counties. And then tomorrow, plenty of clouds, maybe some sprinkles in the afternoon. Highs in the mid to upper 60s to about 70 in Fayetteville. We'll call it partly to mostly cloudy. 7-day forecast, two dry days, tomorrow and Friday. Saturday, we have that rain, 70% chance. Daylight saving time begins on Sunday. Before you go to bed Saturday night, the clocks go forward an hour. 62 and windy on Sunday, 60 on Monday. And again, all of next week, Chris, looks dry and getting more mild with a high of 70. There are a couple of morning lows in the 30s, so you'll still need that heat.
I'm going to be grumpy losing that hour of sleep, but sunshine on the other end of that, so I'm happy about it. Definitely. Thanks, Mike. All right, so it can be easy to feel like your vote is small, especially when millions of cast ballots nationwide. Well, we have proof, though, that every vote counts. Up next, we walk through last night's closest races here in North Carolina. All right, tomorrow night, you can celebrate and support our local arts community when WREL presents Big Night In for the Arts, featuring amazing artists including Pierce Freelon and Tiff Merritt, Trey Wellington, and so, so much more. You can help us raise funds to create healthy, vibrant communities through the arts. Watch and donate tomorrow at 7 o'clock on WREL and wherever you stream WREL.
You know, every election, we are reminded that every vote matters. I don't mean the statements from the politicians or the news reports. The results speak for themselves.
I mean, we have the results right here. So here are last night's closest races in our states. So let's keep it local for just a moment here. In Moore County, a spot on the school board was decided by 108 votes. Not close enough? How about in Vance County, where 38 votes split two candidates running for a Board of Commissioners seat?
In a Northampton County Commissioner's race, the disparity was 33 votes. It gets even tighter outside our coverage area. A Gaston County Commissioner's race, look at the top two candidates there. Three votes separate them. And in Robeson County Commissioner's race, the margin is just two votes. These were the absolute closest races.
And plenty of others were decided by a few hundred votes. So while you might see big disparities in the biggest races on the news, don't forget those hyper-local elections. They tend to be the closest, and those positions often have the most direct impact on you and your community.
It's so true. Thanks for making WREL your choice for local news. Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WREL. As we look live here in downtown Raleigh on Fayetteville Street, looks like we're happy to see the rain going away here in downtown Raleigh. Have a great night.
Keep watching WREL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.